He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
Good morning and welcome to the Wednesday, June 8th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here with Bill, with Gunderson Capital Management, sitting in for Bill today. The markets look to be kind of a mixed bag today. Of course, Dow and the S&P look to be giving back a few of the little bit of the gains that we saw yesterday. As the 10-year Treasury floats around 3%, actually tick above 3% at the moment, and the Nasdaq a little positive there at 12,198, up about 23 points, 0.19% up today. Of course, as I mentioned, the Dow and the S&P 500 are down about a quarter point each. I think the Dow's right at about 33,062. Down 117 today, or 35 basis points. S&P 500 is at 4,150, down about a quarter point. From a commodity standpoint, crude continues to be up. We're under the 120 mark at the moment. Looks like oil is up about a quarter point at the currently, and gold. Hanging in there, up to 1854. It's been hovering around that range for a while, up about 0.12% today. Of course, digital gold up 2.4% at the moment, with Bitcoin up 741 at 30,637. But again, good morning. Welcome to the Tuesday. Actually, it's Wednesday. Wednesday, June 8th edition of the Best Stocks Now show. I'm your host, Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, playing role of relief captain here for Bill today. And yesterday, we had a good day in the markets all around. Of course, I think it's the first back-to-back positive start to the week in over a month. So that's kind of that's something. Of course, we're looking silver lining there, even though we're down on half the market today. But you know, the markets were pretty resilient yesterday, shrugging off that pre-market news from Target, with them announcing lower margins and earnings expectations for Q2. 2022. But the story, like I said, story continues to be the energy sector. 10 of the 11 S&P 500 sectors posted gains yesterday, with the S&P finishing up 1%. NASDAQ finished up 0.9, and the Dow was up 0.8. But it was really led by the energy sector, which is, of course, where we've been positioning portfolios, given inflation risks, and just given where the run that commodities have been on. But energy sector was up 3.1% yesterday, which pretty amazing, given of course the run it's been having already. So as the 10-year, of course, floating around that 3% range, that's going to be we kind of see that remaining as a headwind for the NASDAQ at this point, in terms of how high it can go. And there's also been, we've also seen, continued to see some earnings revisions downward. I'm sure Bill will working some of that into his S&P macro outlook forecast for this week in the newsletter. And if you haven't seen the newsletter, or if you're interested in getting it, you can certainly go to GundersonCapital.com. You can sign up for a 4-week trial there, free trial, and you can kind of get our thoughts and see how we're structuring portfolios to kind of fit around everything that's going on in the world. From an economic standpoint, pretty light news week in terms of economic releases. The market continues to kind of wait, and all eyes are pointing kind of squarely on that May Consumer Price Index data that will be released this coming Friday. And so you're kind of seeing markets kind of on hold globally, actually, just kind of waiting to see, you know, what that looks like. If, you know, has the adage that has inflation peaked? We certainly know it's going to be a historically high number. Just depends on, you know, relatively compared to where things have been. So those are that's probably certainly the biggest thing driving the markets this week in terms of economic data releases. We did get some mortgage application data this morning. We'll actually we'll have some an EIA the EIA petroleum inventories release later on at 10:30 a.m. actually during the show. And of course, with the oil at in that $120 a barrel range, you know, that data point has been has become much more relevant than it has in years past, just because it's going to tell us, you know, it gives an idea of where inventories are, if they're below expectations, or if the, you know, number comes in higher, then that's going to be can have an effect and push oil down. So we'll be looking for that around 10:30 today. But from a mortgage application standpoint, with interest rates, a couple interesting notes. The mortgage applications were down 6.5% this month, with, you know, with interest rates really beginning to kind of take a hold on housing and kind of stamp out that demand a bit, which in reality is what the Fed is trying to do. Purchasing index was, you know, for mortgages was down 7.1% versus down 0.6% prior. So you can kind of see a very big change in terms of new purchases. Refinancing index pretty much steady, you know, as you would expect. And we kind of hit earlier in the week. You know, refinances are way down because it just doesn't make sense to refinance at these rates. And most people who did refinance, you know, if you were going to refinance, you pretty much already did that. And that index was down, you know, 5.6% versus 5.4% prior. So that's kind of continued. In terms of a 30-year mortgage rate, that came in at 5.4% compared to the week prior, it was 5.33%. So not quite as still a little lower than we were about 4 weeks ago on a 30-year mortgage rate, but, you know, from where we were just, you know, say a year and a half ago, much more expensive in terms of your monthly payment on a 30-year mortgage now than it was, which is what's caused kind of that slowdown in housing, and that's, you know, pretty much exactly what the Fed is looking to do. But one important note, I think, and, you know, could be somewhat concerning, is consumer credit. We talked about consumer spending yesterday and how much of that ended up being on the credit card side. And so consumer credit expanded more than expected in April, expanded over $38 billion. The consensus was around $35 billion. And currently, outstanding credit sits at a little over $4.5 trillion. And seasonally adjusted, that's 19.6% more than it was, last year. So you can, you know, we're beginning to see that, you know, that kind of goes to show you in terms of purchases, right? And inflation, where, you know, folks are kind of pulling out the credit card instead of the debit card. You know, more often, given certainly probably at the pump, given, you know, kind of where prices are and have been going, and that's the biggest worry, right? In terms of earnings, whether it's because the American consumer really has buoyed the global markets and global growth, in our opinion, for an extended period of time since COVID, certainly since the great reopening, where in terms of economic zones, we're certainly better positioned than Europe with their issues. Of course, Russian Ukrainian conflict tacking on to that, China with their kind of stop and start in terms of COVID lockdowns and COVID zero. So that's really, you know, really been a damper on growth, and we'll actually talk about global growth forecasts in the next segment of the show. We had some you know, global growth being slashed by both the World Bank and the OECD, and so we'll kind of go through those numbers here when we come back on the second segment, and that's what we're doing. You know, that's what we're trying to look forward. As Bill always mentions, right, the you know, future earnings are what drives future stock prices. So we'll take a look at that here in the second quarter of the show. But we just getting started this morning, and we'll be right back. This is the Best Stocks Now show. Back here to the second quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour with your host Barry Kite sitting in for Mr. Bill Gunderson today. Looks like the markets are still unchanged from when we started the show. So I guess in such a volatile market as of late, it's probably I guess that's a good thing. But you know, and the main thing is we're looking, you know, forward. The market's always forward looking. It's kind of a crystal ball, if you will, in terms of expectations and, you know, always revisiting the, as analysts, we're always, you know, revisiting those expectations as new information comes in and new things happen around the globe. And, of course, inflation has been one of the biggest, you know, catalyst in terms of the markets and earnings. And for an extended period of time, we were seeing, of course, companies being able to pass along those you know, that inflation onto us as consumers and you know, keeping their margins relatively stable. You know, some companies were actually increasing margins depending on the business that they were in. But we're, you know, kind of beginning to see you know, a lot of revisions in terms of S&P 500 companies. Target being the one yesterday. I think that's the second time they've lowered guidance in, you know, essentially less than a month. And we're also seeing it in terms of global growth. So, you know, within essentially 24 hours of each other, the World Bank and the OECD, which is the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, both of them, you know, cut their global growth forecast, like I said, pretty much within 24 hours of each other. World Bank's came out about midday yesterday, and the OECD came out with their cut earlier this morning. But essentially, the World Bank is essentially now pegs their 2022 forecast for global growth at 2.9%. They cut that from an earlier forecast. Just in January, they had lowered it to 4.1%. And so, in January and before that, before they cut it from 4 to 4.1%, before that, they saw, you know, of course, growth was in 2021 was at 5.7%. So, of course, you know, going from 5.7 to 2.9, between 2021 and 2022, you know, essentially, cutting global growth by half. In that time period, in the same thing as I mentioned with OECD, they had they revised their global outlook from 3% or to 3% from 4.5%. So they cut theirs by 1.5%. And so, you know, looking, and they actually give a 2023 estimate as well. They lowered their 2023 estimate to 2.8. So They're expecting 3% this year and then 2.8% next year. And so those, you know, those are pretty significant cuts from a from a global basis. As we know, we're in a global economy nowadays, and you know, corporations, especially large corporations around the globe, are generating more and more of their revenue outside of the company that they're domiciled in. Apple, Microsoft, you know, those being great examples. And so, you know, as we see these global growth forecasts cut, those are going to play into, our expectations, the market's expectations, going forward. And, you know, in terms of U.S. growth or growth in, growth in the biggest growth decline, of course, is involving Russia and Europe. Some of the other largest declines were seen, of course, with China, certainly for 2022 in terms of lockdowns and the zero COVID policy there. But you know, we were continue seeing it in more and more companies and earnings reports. Cracker Barrel was one of the more recent ones. They came out with earnings yesterday, and they missed their earnings estimates, and they're kind of guiding their next quarter lower. And the CEO Sandra Cochran, she specifically mentioned a challenging macro environment, including deteriorating consumer sentiment and high inflationary pressures, impacted both our top and bottom lines in their fiscal third quarter. So those are, you know, two things that we've been talking about is the American consumer and consumer sentiment declining, along with investor sentiment has had some challenges certainly in 2022 for good reasons when we look at the index, how the indexes have performed. But the inflationary pressures, of course, are leading to less profitability for them, and less money in consumer pockets for us to spend on goods, and so that's a great example. Also, we've seen Union Pacific recently warned of inflationary pressures, most of theirs coming from increased pressure from fuel prices and labor cost. Driving their incremental margins lower. So as we continue this, this inflation narrative, it's going to have an impact on earnings. And you're beginning to see, some of the larger wirehouses kind of downgrade their S&P price targets for the year. A lot of them are still kind of have a ways to go to bring them down from where they started, but. As I said, that's probably one of the most important parts of the newsletter that Bill puts together each week is that macro outlook page. And so for a while now, we've been seeing, just because of interest rates rising, we've seen the PE ratio in terms of how much we should pay for earnings come down from 23 to around 17. And then now, right, we haven't seen much impact on the earnings side, but now your earnings per share number, may begin, looks to be like it may begin to take a hit too. So kind of burning the candle at both ends there. Certainly, energy prices and just inflation as a whole being a big catalyst for those moves downward. The other thing is, kind of answering the question as we hit on a lot of the fossil fuel argument and talk yesterday for reason that prices may remain high is where do we get the energy from? Where are the sources of this energy, the energy that we use on a daily basis in terms of moving from fossil fuels towards a greener economy? And we'll kind of cover that on the third second half of the show, and we'll get into some individual names as well. Stay with us. This is the Best Stocks Now show. And welcome back here to the second half of the Wednesday edition of the Best Stocks Now Hour. I am Barry Kite, planner and analyst here at Gunderson Capital, taking the reins for Bill today. And looking at, we want to have a discussion kind of around energy and fossil fuels in general, just because commodities are certainly the energy sector's pretty much been one of the only places to be this year in the market when you look at the overall sector breakdown. We're obviously we hear about it all the time. We're in this transition from a primarily hydrocarbon driven energy generation towards a greener, less fossil fuel dependent future. What that looks like, how long it takes us for us to get there is certainly a topic of debate. And the truth is we don't know, right? What technologies are going to take hold right now. Of course, it's revolving around, lithium, electric cars. But in reality, there's a lot of, you take a company like, QuantumScape, they're in that looking for a solid state battery. So they're trying to, we just don't know what technology is going to win, going forward. So there's still, that's still up in the air. What we do know is kind of what's worked in the past. Of course, and that being, whether it's, oil or coal or natural gas, uranium, from a nuclear power standpoint, those are knowns. And then, of course, we've got, certainly wind and solar, in the future and lots of other, technologies that are being worked on to hopefully make some of that stuff more efficient, and just creating new sources of energy, is kind of the goal there. But, when we look at energy prices, year over year, for example, you've got, we've got crude oil, up 72% year over year. You've got natural gas up, 203% year over year. Coal up 220% year over year. Of course, we all know the pains that we're feeling at the pump. I got an email from a client yesterday down in the Sarasota area, and it was $120 to fill up his truck, and some of those prices are now in certain places up over $5 a gallon there, and so the question comes, where are these sources of energy coming from, right? And that's whether it's liquid natural gas or nuclear or wind and solar, where's it coming from? And when we look, saw a story of, Texas power use, is set to hit an all-time record. I think the folks in Texas just broke, the June record, on Monday. In terms of, power usage, of course, a lot of that, temperature related, hot weather. You're going to have businesses, homes, using more AC, and they're kind of forecasted to break the all time record here coming up this weekend. I think we've got Houston maybe in hitting triple digits on Saturday. So if they're in Houston, plan accordingly. But that's, that's kind of, where we're, those are the circumstances that we're dealt. And the question is kind of where is it coming from? Where are we going to, in terms of, we hit on the refineries yesterday where we're likely not going to have any extra refinery capacity, essentially ever in the U.S. Saw a story, yesterday that the, Biden administration was seeking some funds, to purchase some enriched uranium, which Bill has mentioned on here a number of times of nuclear power, kind of having a resurgence, The Biden administration was seeking $4.3 billion in funds to purchase enriched uranium. The problem is most of the enriched uranium actually comes from Russia. So what we have to do is if we're going to go a nuclear or uranium route, right? Then the U.S. has to ramp up their capacity here, not just necessarily mining uranium, but also enriching it. And so that was kind of the point of apparently the point of those funds, which, when you look back, and all the no nuke movement and everything else, it's pretty, kind of somewhat interesting, kind of tells you the situation that we're in. And, administration's kind of turning to, potentially a nuclear option from that standpoint. And it's worked. Nuclear has worked fantastic in a country like France, where, I think they're the largest, I know at least in Europe, the largest exporter of nuclear power. They have a lot of nuclear power plants, and that helps, helps them from an energy independence standpoint, and they actually export the energy to the countries around them in the European mainland. One company we own, Archer Daniels Midland, they got $50 million in U.S. aid a couple of days back for biofuel. So they're part of what they do is a biofuel producer. During COVID really took a hit on the biofuel plants. Essentially, it made certainly where gas prices got to, oil prices dipping very, very historic lows during COVID. It really made a lot of the biofuel facilities unprofitable. So I think the whole industry took around about a $3.7 billion loss, the biofuels industry, during that time. Of course, biofuels are used, cooking oil. Of course, restaurants weren't open. You had a reduction in cooking oil. Reading the tea leaves in terms of, government recognizing there's a problem, and trying, doing, maybe a little bit late, but they're, making some incentives to actually, hopefully, get things moving in a certain direction. They had a Jefferies report here, that came out, and, they see essentially coal prices, remaining high for an extended period of time. The forecasts that they have there are, essentially they're forecasting, prior to where coal is now, coal rarely got above $100, and they're looking out, through 2023 of targeting coal at $100 a ton going forward. So coal is going to remain expensive. Well, and of course all the opponents of coal in general. Is coal viable going forward from a price wise? Right, it's going to be expensive, right, to generate potentially power that way. Which is why you begin to get corporate investment in other positions or other fuel sources. Another company that we own, Chesapeake Energy, right? They're looking for they don't do any liquid natural gas at this point, but they're actually just hired a liquefied natural gas advisor. He's gonna, they're gonna help try to expand and give them the ability to begin playing in that liquefied natural gas market, which is, looks to be kind of, certainly Europe's bridge, and we referred to it in our Equinor article that we wrote last week on Seeking Alpha. I encourage you to check that out. But that's, liquid natural gas is going to be, likely that hydrocarbon bridge, at least from where we're at now to kind of greener pastures, if you will. So we've seen that there. You've got Exxon, Shell, Conoco, working with Qatar on a liquefied natural gas expansion project. So I think we're going to, the only problem is that those, that capacity is not going to come on board till 2027. So we've got, I think it's just interesting and looking at, where we're going, and how we're going to get there. And there's, I think there's an opportunity from a stock standpoint or investment standpoint to benefit from that. But we'll blazing through the show today. We'll be right back for the fourth quarter. Best Stocks Now.
You gotta go where you wanna go and do what you wanna do.
And welcome back here to the fourth and final quarter of the Best Stocks Now Hour. I am Barry Kite, planner analyst here at Gunderson Capital Management, handling the duties for Bill on this Wednesday. And a lot of times we'll fourth segment we'll have a stock of the day or kind of look at what we think's attractive, and then also sometimes it's important to kind of look at some of the spots to avoid. Along those lines, there certainly have been those higher or high PE, long duration stocks, or essentially stocks with no earnings, or where that in a high cash burn, and where those earnings don't look to be coming to fruition until further into the future. Kathy Wood has made her name on those parts of the market, and did very well, certainly in a low interest rate and high growth environment. And just interesting, we get questions that you guys must really dislike Kathy Wood. It has nothing to do with her personally. We've never met her. We actually owned a lot of those stocks that she owned during the time where she was gathering a lot of assets at ARC, and certainly doing very well, and was getting lots of publicity for it, and certainly for good reason. It's a unique story. Talking about, flying taxis and digital or, metaverse future, AI, writing about those names are much more entertaining and interesting, right? A lot of times than some of the steel names and, liquid natural gas names or fertilizer names that we've written about, in the past. But, the main point really is that, she's constrained in terms of her mandate and prospectus, having to, be kind of tied to those types of stocks. And I think most, if you read the prospectus, I think most of those, I think it's a, she has to be at least 80% invested in those types of names, depending on the various fund. But it's interesting that saw a note kind of come out of Bloomberg that essentially ARC Funds is seen about 50% of their assets vanish or leave over 2022, and it's really an interest rate story. I mean, as those high tech stocks, certainly lost the market's a fashion show a lot of times, and they certainly fell out of favor from a technical standpoint. And then also fell out of favor from a fundamental standpoint. It just didn't make sense. In a higher interest rate environment, it didn't make sense to be in those names that she had to invest in, really. And it's just interesting because the nine funds currently hold about 15.3 billion dollars in assets under management, which is about 48% lower than the beginning of the year. You know, as ETF groups go, right? It's seen the largest drop of the 25 primary largest issuers of ETFs. And there's two ways, right, to have assets decline in that manner. One is just people leaving, or what we refer to as outflows. So people selling the fund and repositioning that over to dividend paying stocks or what have you, value stocks. So part of it's outflows, but the biggest part has been in those in asset value decline. So the value of the underlying assets or what they're invested in has taking a huge hit. And so having those large drawdowns, I think of the money lost, roughly 15 or so billion, a little bit less than that, but the outflows I think only totaled around 265 million. So that just goes to show you, right, that most of it was in the loss of funds. I mean, you take ARK, for example, ARKK, down roughly, 54, a little bit more than 54%. But they also had inflows of 1.37 billion. So, I think all of our other funds had net outflows, but that one actually had a net inflow, and still, right, is in terms of assets under management, dropped roughly about 54%. But, it just goes to show you there's certain parts of the market to be in at particular points in time, and at other times it doesn't, you don't want to be in that position. From ARK Fund's perspective, right, there, she's required to be in those, which puts the onus on, if your advisor has you in those particular funds, if individual investors, right, it's up to you to go ahead and get out of that position and move over to something else more favorable during those times. So it's in this business, structure is important, and structurally, having to be tied to a particular style depending on the time frame, can be an advantage, or in other times it can be a significant disadvantage. And drawdown's important. I mean, if you're down 50%, right, you've got to be up 100% just to get back to even, versus, if you're down 10%, I think mathematically you roughly have to be up, close to, say, 12% or so, to get back to even. So, those large drawdowns are certainly, tough to come by. And it's one of the, reasons that, here at Gunderson Capital, we've got more of an unconstrained approach, meaning, if we need to shift from high growth names, which we were in, coming out of March of 2020, and move into some, more commodity based names, then we can. If we need to put some portfolio insurance or inverse ETFs in the mix, or hold a certain amount of cash intentionally, we can do that as well, versus being tied to a prospectus. So I think in this environment, it's important to stay flexible. If you want to reach us, you can always give Edie a call at 855-611-BEST, or reach us on the website at GundersonCapital.com. But we'll certainly appreciate you listening, and we'll be back tomorrow. Have a great day, everyone.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.